You're listening to This Week in UX for January 21st, 2010. And we're back. I'd like to thank all of the people who have subscribed to This Week in UX in my absence. I am Joseph Dickerson. I am the host of This Week in UX, and I just want to let everyone know that I will try and do better about getting this podcast out on a regular basis. I've been busy on a project that required quite a bit of international travel over the past few weeks, before and after the holidays, so I will, again, try and reset my routine and get it back to normal. And so hopefully we will continue to live up to the namesake of this show's title, which is This Week in UX, not This Month. At any rate, I got a couple of interesting topics I'd like to discuss, and hopefully you will find them interesting and informative. So let's get started. Just posted a blog entry at josephdickerson.com talking about what I consider total information awareness. When you look at total information awareness, many of you listening may be familiar with the term from a government, program to help fight terrorism that has been in the planning stages or actually partially executed over the past few years. I'm referring in this instance, in this blog entry, to total information awareness from the perspective of us. We're now entering a space where you have tools such as the Yelp monocle, which actually allows you to have augmented reality on your mobile phones, all the way to the Google Goggles application, which not only allows you to find out information and contextual knowledge about restaurants and shops like Yelp does, but actually allows you to find out information about anything you take a photo of. Now, this is far from the facial recognition technology we see on every other episode of 24, but it's pretty darn close. And Google has actually said that they will not use facial recognition technology on Google Goggles. But when will one of their competitors decide to try that, to get a jump on Google? That's a very interesting question. And I think we're about to have a potential situation where in the next few years, with the various advancements in processing power and hard drive space and ubiquitous internet access, that we will be able to effectively take a photo of a person and find out potentially everything that there is to know about said person online. Well, as the great master writer Stan Lee famously cited, with great power comes great responsibility. And again, let's be mindful of that. And if we start to see that technology, we need to start deciding as designers and also users what is the best use and where are the boundary lines for that technology. It's basically all about the user experience. Again, you have to understand that just because something can be done, you don't necessarily have to or should be doing it. So, again, check that article out at josephdickerson.com. A couple of quick thoughts regarding the new Apple tablet, which is supposed to come out approximately a week and a half from now. A lot of rumors circulating, and if you are following anything in the tech community, you know that there is quite a few people talking about how this is a Kindle killer and it has a lot of the media power behind the iTunes store backing it, which is really going to differentiate it from the other hundreds of thousands of tablet manufacturers who apparently unveiled their tablets this past month at CES. I'm very intrigued at some of the stories and the news around a new enhanced user interface that is going to be part of this tablet. Apple has continuously innovated in the interface design area, and I say that as a self-aware Apple fanboy. And so when there's news about a potential revolutionary new UI, like Chris Matthews, I get a tingle kind of up and down my leg about that. Truth to be told, I think Apple's going to leverage this device as the future of personal computing, not just a media tablet. It's going to be something that they will say is the fourth revolution in computing, And I think they're 100% right about that if they make it work. They have the ecosystem, they have the infrastructure, they have the support network. Now, if they can just make that device really impress, I think a lot of people, including myself, will be happily plunking down some money to buy it. As always, pay attention to websites such as TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog, for information and many, many rumors about the soon-to-be-released Apple tablet. One story I did not get a chance to cover because of my business travel and the holidays was the kerfuffle around the privacy settings on Facebook. In case you're not aware, Jason Calacanis, a regular guest on This Week in Tech, a podcast that is not associated with this one, but was, of course, the inspiration for This Week in UX. Jason Calacanis basically brought this up when Facebook changed their privacy settings and publicly said, hey, guess what? Every time the new user logged in, we have new privacy settings. You want to go ahead and change it now? Well, the usage pattern, as Facebook probably, and I'm almost assured, knows, is when people see a modal window when they log in, they say, yeah, sure, and they agree to whatever the defaults might exist on said screen. Well, the problem is the defaults, if the user had never actually changed their privacy or security settings, were setting all of the content that the person had created, loaded, and added to Facebook as being public. Now, Jason Calacanis had a theory that this was because Facebook was looking at an IPO, and if all the data was public, that meant that the data could be searched by Google, that meant more page hits, which meant more users, which meant more money for Facebook. If Facebook was private, as was the original intent, then they won't get all those page hits. Now, I won't ascribe any motives to this, except to say that there's a very famous website I've gone to and spoken of on my personal blog. This website is called Usability for Evil, which talks about how companies use some standard tricks and understandings of how people use websites to basically take advantage of that, i.e. Setting up a free trial button, which is bigger than the free version, or making the paid version be much more prominent so people don't actually see where the free version of the software is, which means people actually either buy the paid software or actually join a free trial, which ends up costing them money month to month. So I'm pretty sure that the Usability for Evil principle is in play when it comes to Facebook's change of and how they designed this process. They got a lot of heat for it online, and a lot of users actually have quit Facebook. And actually, one colleague of mine famously said, "I'm tired of the particular brand of Facebook BS." Not a very good move when it comes to winning the hearts and minds of knowledgeable influencers in technology by Facebook. Will there be additional repercussions and changes down the line if Facebook does have an IPO? We'll see. I personally still use Facebook, but I definitely avoid doing any of the quizzes because I am well aware of how much the authors of said quizzes know about you and your friends when you take such a quiz. In fact, the ACLU has a very interesting quiz, which basically is called What Do Quizzes Know About You? Which actually, as you're taking the quiz, will actually look up the data in your Facebook account that it has access to when you agree to take the quiz. Definitely look that up if you're a Facebook user. It's quite illuminating. My final thoughts today, I said I would get the podcast out on a regular basis. I didn't say it would be long. My final thoughts are we're entering a new decade, and I think looking back, it is pretty obvious to me that design, both user experience design and industrial design, has played an incredibly huge part in the world changing over the past few years. We have design now mattering much, much more than it did, I think, even 10 years ago. I'm very happy about that because it keeps me gainfully employed. And in addition, it just means that there's more opportunities for changing the world around us and making the experiences better. The reason why I do user experience design is to do exactly that, to make a difference in this world. The way I look at it is, if you can make a person's life a little easier, and make the design that they that you inflict upon them save them time and energy and effort and reduce frustration, then those people may just actually give money to charities such as the Haitian Relief Fund, which I recommend all of my listeners do, or maybe hug their children and not be such a grumpy, gloomy Gus when they go home at night. So user experience matters, design matters, and I think you look at the world around us and how it's changed in just these past 10 years, I think you cannot disagree with that basic premise. So here's to 10 more years of great user experience design work from me and all the people in this space. Well, that's it for the first podcast of the new year. Again, I'd like to thank all of my subscribers and listeners. Don't forget to check us out at thisweekinux.com, as well as my personal blog at josephdickerson.com. I always appreciate feedback and comments, so please drop me a line at the websites aforementioned. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.